so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Canada's only radio program on advocacy and compassionate living for animals. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, Canada. I'm Carol Davies McIntosh, and I'm joined today by my buddy, Allison Cole.
Hey, Carol, buddy.
This is Friday, October 11th, 2019, and today we are bringing you the second in our School Days series. So on the show today, we have an interview with an elementary school teacher who talks about, among other things, the difficulty of communicating his ethics to his co-workers. In addition, we have an interview with a music student in Vancouver City College who takes us back to her days in public school and shares some of the challenges that she has had in college, including being targeted by an instructor because she's vegan. Students aren't the only ones getting bullied for their ethics. We'll read you a statement later from a teacher who felt so unsafe in joining our discussion today that she just sent a statement for us to read. But first, let's chat about New York City's recommended ban on processed meats in public schools.
Yeah.
And the leading question here is, how much does a wiener weigh, Allison?
Yes, that has been a question very serious that we've been pondering over the last 20 minutes or so here as we were doing our research to prep for this segment. And we will find out the answer to that in just a bit. So please listen on. So you might have seen in mainstream news headlines lately that New York City is banning meat to be served in public schools. Wow. Like, what a headline, right? Too good to be true? Is it really happening? Well, the answer is right now it's not happening, but it could be in the future. So what has been happening in New York City is the City Council of New York introduced the idea in March 2018, about a year and a half ago, to incorporate a ban of serving food in public schools in New York City. And it was just approved to be recommended to the Department of Education of New York City this September. So that's why you've been seeing it in the headlines, if you have been. So New York City Department of Education is responsible for serving school meals within the New York City public school system, and they serve around 850,000 meals to students daily. According to School Foods Menus, New York City public schools administer numerous food menus containing processed meats, including hot dogs, ham, bacon, and sausage. Whereas processed meat like hot dogs, ham, bacon, and sausage is meat that has been transformed through salting, curing, fermentation, smoking, or other processes to enhance flavor or to improve preservation. And also, whereas according to the Harvard's Teach Chan School of Public Health, meat processing methods like curing, smoking, or cooking can lead to the formation of potentially cancer-causing carcinogenic chemicals, we learned in 2015 that the World Health Organization announced that the consumption of processed meat is carcinogenic to humans, which can lead to increased risk of colorectal cancer, pancreatic cancer, prostate cancer, coronary heart disease, stroke, and type 2 diabetes, among other diseases. So this is all leading up to that the City Council of New York wants these items to not be served. They should be banned from schools, shouldn't they? I mean, school is a place of learning and leading young people to become responsible, thriving adults. Why would you be feeding them these options in their cafeterias? And Carol, I understand you were saying that in Metro Vancouver here, in the high schools as well, there's the cafeteria situation. I didn't grow
up
with that.
There's cafeterias, but, yeah. In as far as I know, in all high schools in the Lower Mainland.
Oh, wow. I imagine they might be serving the same kind of food because
I'm sure
like,
they
you know,
are,
same, and they same everywhere. Right?
They still have things like hot dog days that they. Yeah. So this gets to why a wiener's weight matters,
right? Because we were doing some math, then we
right. The International Agency for Research on Cancer, which is a World Health Organization's branch, says that each 50-gram portion of processed meat eaten daily increases the risk of cancer by 18%. So the average wiener, we found out, weighs about 100 grams. So that means a half a wiener a day is going to increase your chance of cancer by 18%, or could. So that's a big jump.
Yeah, as a parent, I certainly wouldn't want to be putting my children through a school, or they'd be vegan already. But, you know, think about that. Even if you're an omnivorous parent, do you want your children to be eating this kind of food in schools that are given to them and even at home as well? So colorectal cancer is, you know, that is prevented each year through healthy lifestyle changes such as eating more fiber and exercising properly. Now, also in this resolution, it says, according to a 2017 article in the Agricultural Research and Technology Open Access Journal, livestock production, which is responsible for adding to the supply of processed meats, is an important cause of various environmental problems such as greenhouse gas emissions, agricultural land expansion, and associated deforestation, surface water, eutrophication, terrestrial biodiversity loss, and nutrient imbalances. So the Council of New York City is recognizing that as well, which
is
environmental reasons, which we also need to be responsible for, right?
New York City public schools are also reducing the purchase of beef by 50%. And they have already started the Meatless Mondays, and this is just a continuation of that. They're also discontinuing, the actual city is discontinuing purchases of single-use plastics for their offices. So,
and a fur ban might be coming too.
Oh, well, there you go. So
New York is progressive. I'm just wondering who sits on the council of the city of New York, because I want to shake their hands. Or is it a bunch of vegans? Is it just one who's sort of leading everyone in the right direction?
Now, what about Vancouver? I think we could do this in Vancouver. It seems like a good project for someone to take on.
All right.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical man. You study him hard, hoping to pass.
Well, this is the school days segment. So we found it really difficult in this series about the use of animals in schools to find teachers who are willing to be interviewed. There seems to be a fear of speaking out. So even when we offered to protect their names and places of work, they were still worried about their jobs and possible reprimands. So I'm going to read to you a voice message from an elementary school teacher who is also an animal activist. She asked that I transcribe it and read it because I had been chatting with her about how difficult it was to get teachers to come forth and that they seemed to be really worried about talking openly. This is what she said. Carol, teachers should be worried. There's a lot of censorship that goes on. I don't even know if it's legal. I feel discriminated against. I feel like I can't be myself. I've had kids making bacon jokes in class, and I have to be careful never to even accidentally wear anything that says a message that is vegan or pro-animal, because that's considered some kind of a like religious thing, whereas anybody can wear anything else on their shirt that says I love bacon, or they can have clothes that say Adidas or Bench or whatever other brand name. I have been prevented this year from being on the environmental committee at school. I was told by my principal that he was not allowing me to be on it because he doesn't want us to talk about eliminating animal products. I also know another teacher was censored. It's very discouraging, and as I speak to you, I feel like crying because it is so wrong. I can't even begin to tell you how it's not okay it is. I don't think that I can be on your show, but if you want to use my statements and read them and talk about the censorship with someone else, you can. I'm just really stunned, actually, Allison, by this. And I
am stunned, too. This is locally, did you say?
This is in Canada. I'm not going to give any more information. She was very worried about this. But should teachers be able to voice their concerns about the treatment of animals in schools?
Absolutely.
Many school districts, students have the right to refuse to dissect animals in science class on the grounds of ethics or religiosity. Should teachers have those same rights? Do they, under the freedom of expression, which is in our Charter of Rights and Freedoms, have the right to, you know, maybe not pounce on kids about things, but at least present the other side?
Well, absolutely. As I'm kind of shocked to hear about this. When I was in high school years and years ago, I helped to found our student environmental club, and I was the leader of that for a couple of years, and I had free hand to do whatever I wanted, and our teacher who sponsored the club, he supported us, and no one said anything. And that was back when I was finding my veggie roots. Mm-hmm. Like, I was all about the environment, but, you know, my mom still cooked food, animals at home, but I was totally going in that direction.
Right.
And I had this huge bulletin board that I would update all the time with all kinds of information with regarding to animals and the environment. And these are items that it seems like the school is trying to hold back. Like, public school should be an area where ideas are encouraged.
And generated.
Right? And generated.
I think there's a lot more latitude given to students because they are exploring. The teachers are influencers. Mm-hmm. So I understand that they don't want them, you know, hitting the kids over the head with information. But how about a balanced approach?
Right. But I know teachers as well who are allowed to show their students like films that we all encourage people to watch. And my friend Monica, she runs the Animal Rights Club in Colorado. I want to have her on the show to give us another perspective. So that's very unfortunate, I have to say. And thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. And so, but we do have a brave teacher that we interviewed, and he's coming right up, James. So, James, thanks for joining us today on Animal Voices. I'm really excited to hear your stories about working with kids in the public school system and what kinds of things you run into with them in terms of your ethical stance about animals.
Of course, yeah. I'm happy to be here. Thanks.
Were you raised vegan?
I wasn't. I was not raised vegan.
Okay.
I became vegan about 5 years ago, like on the day, actually.
Oh, well, happy vegan-versary.
Yeah.
Okay, because that gives you a different perspective, I think, than if somebody was raised vegan.
I think so.
How much experience do you have in working with children?
Professionally working with children, I've worked in childcare settings for the past 4 years, and that includes after-school care, before-school care, as well as summer camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a elementary teacher for the past year and a half.
So the kids are 5 to 11?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you find in your job that you run into practices that are harmful to animals?
Yes.
Can you tell us about some of those?
It's a wide array that I experience. One of the most apparent is fun food days that we have, and milk days that we have in particular. So fun food days happen at school about once a month, depending on the school that you're at. And parents or guardians can sign up for their child to have fun food or hot food. That could be supplied by Boston Pizza or Subway, or just can be hot dogs or different sandwiches. And they usually contain meat and dairy. And like I said, there's milk days as well. And I think it's about every month as well. Milk is provided for the kids, and there'll be a couple soy milks thrown in for allergies. The kids just get a little carton of milk that the teachers have to pass out every month or so. And those are the two biggest things that I experienced in the classroom.
Why do they have milk days? What is that all about?
I don't know. I think it's just a tradition. Talking to teachers in the staff room, like, I've asked teachers, like, why we have milk days. And they said, like, oh, I had milk days when I was a kid. And it's a part of my job to pass out that milk. And sometimes the EAs do it in the classroom because I don't feel all too comfortable doing that. I think fun food day is the same. It's a part of a tradition, and there's never any healthy options either. And it's really concerning.
So in fun food days, are there vegan options provided?
It doesn't look like it.
Okay.
I haven't inquired, but like from the places that they get it from, like Boston Pizza, from hot dogs, from all that similar stuff. Like, there's no vegan options. There actually is one. Last year, I asked, I was at a school, and they had hot dogs, and a couple kids got veggie dogs. I think they requested veggie dogs. I don't know if they're vegan, but they were veggie dogs. So I was like, oh.
I think that's something that's starting with the different alternative meat products and that sort of thing that's out there now. But I'm just surprised about the milk days. Almost sounds like the dairy industry is pushing that button.
That's what I'm probably thinking. And I'm like, I'm wondering if this year, if it's going to be on the decline just because of the new food guide. Because the previous one, like, milk's a heavy part of the food pyramid in previous years, and like, it's not even on the food guide right now. So I'm wondering if it'll be on the decline, or if there's going to be offerings of more plant-based milks, or if it's just going to be wiped out. There is, at the school I'm teaching at right now, actually, I was at a staff meeting today, and the school I'm at, they offer hot lunches for students every day, just for the community we're in. And they've actually removed milk from what students receive for hot lunch.
Oh.
So instead of milk, they're encouraged to bring an empty water bottle where they can fill their bottle with water.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's absolutely a step in the right direction.
That's interesting.
And just, the teacher reaction today was quite positive and kind of put like a little smile on my face.
Right.
Like, okay, they're removing milk. Like, sure, there's going to be meat, dairy options, or probably the only options for hot food, or but at least they did that. So that's maybe moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. You've said that there was an incident that you ran into with an animal brought in for science purposes.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
Definitely. So I'm a teacher on call, usually a teacher on call. In one class I was in, they had eggs in an incubator, and one batch of eggs was quail eggs, and another batch was duck, I think they were duck eggs, and it was a grade 1-2 class, so I'm assuming it's a part of the science curriculum. It's about learning life cycles and like learning how animals develop and things, and so there were eggs in this incubator, and I had developed a relationship with this teacher, so I was comfortable asking them like why they needed to bring, or first of all, where did they get the eggs from? And they said that, like, oh, like, my uncle, like, has eggs that he was willing to donate to our classroom, and we're going to use them for science and see how they develop in the egg and see how the embryo works and see, like, when they hatch, like, what happens. Made me a bit uncomfortable, especially being a sub in that class. And I was a returning TOC, so I got to see how the egg kind of developed in the incubator, and I was somewhat apprehensive. I didn't want to be too confrontational and asking too many probing questions about the ethics around it and stuff, just because this teacher was requesting me as a substitute teacher, so they basically like were kind of employing me.
So it's a difficult position for you to be in, because your ethics are being affronted, but it's also your job, and you're wondering how can you broach that with them.
That's definitely, I felt very uncomfortable. I found myself biting my tongue a lot in the staff room during lunch, just wanting to engage in those conversations, but wanting to engage in them in a non-confrontational way, where I can, like, I felt like I really wanted to open up their idea, like, change their perspective about how they could learn about the life cycle without being like confrontational. And as these eggs developed, as they hatched, some of them died and some of them didn't look so healthy. And like, that's the point where I was, what's happening with these ducks or quails? Where are they going? I felt so uncomfortable, and I did want to confront them a bit. So I did ask some questions about that. They're just a bit short. They weren't sure what was happening with them. They just wanted to have these in them or in the classroom just to show the students of what happened.
I saw
the effectiveness behind it, because the kids were glued to this incubator, and they were like really engaged in seeing what happened to the eggs. But I think most part of that is because this teacher enthusiasm about bringing this in, hyping it up, like we're seeing real life development of an egg, and they just don't see the ethical concerns that someone else may see behind that.
Right, of course.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's the mainstream, right? That's the mainstream attitude. Were you able to provide some teaching moments about compassion for the kids around this?
Not so much, no. I was only in the classroom a couple times. Like, the things that I was tasked to teach didn't really revolve around science or what these eggs were doing. It involved like language arts or reading. And I really should have taken an opportunity to bring in those moments of compassionate pedagogy or teaching. Something I do next time.
So as you go into this position, do you see any solutions for creating more compassionate programs for children?
See any solutions? Like, I really think children are just the most compassionate people on the planet. Like, they're born compassionate, they're born empathetic. Mm-hmm. And I think just fostering that in kids, it's like, that's one of the most important things you could do. And just kind of creating a safe, positive space is a really big thing. But like bringing in compassionate ideas around like science, especially around learning about life cycles, there's definitely ways we can bring in compassionate learning, compassionate mm-hmm. teaching mm-hmm. that can involve technology, especially instead of seeing how an egg develops. You could watch YouTube videos around that, or I'm sure there's some different apps or technology pieces that like can really showcase learning in that way. I'm sure there's other things, like especially projects that they could do that can really foster that compassion and foster empathetic teaching or empathetic mm-hmm. learning.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of the Animals and Science Institute has a lot of different creative solutions for looking and learning about animal biology that they actually will come and help teachers decide what is going to be the best program for them to run in their science. So there are more solutions now than there used to be, that's for sure. But I think that we're still looking at the status quo for most of those things. And probably most teachers don't even think about, you know, where the eggs came from or where the chicks will be going at the end or any of that. So
I think like you said, it's the status quo. It's like, I think it's absolutely right. Like looking at the resources that we have in the classrooms and the library, like a lot of them are dated and a lot of them are quite old, and we're using these to teach our children, and people are still stuck in the status quo and people are still stuck in what's tradition. So I think you're totally right in saying that.
So going forward, you know, once you get a permanent position, do you think that will help you to feel more confident in bringing up some of these ideas?
I think so. Like as I build my confidence as I build my skills and experience as a teacher, especially bringing in these compassionate ways to teach children, mm-hmm. I can show the teachers that it's effective. And I can show the teachers what my beliefs are and how they're working and fostering empathy in the classroom and student learning. And so I definitely see myself bringing in more of these resources to teach children. I consider myself a compassionate person and empathetic person. I think it's my duty, and me saying that, in helping children develop those skills of empathy, mm-hmm. compassion, peace, kindness, like those types of things. So absolutely.
Well, that's great. Well, I'm glad that we have people like you going into teaching, because the kids really need you there.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really excited to continue my teaching.
Good.
I love it.
Thanks for taking the time with us today, James, and also for your compassion for animals.
Of course. Thank you so much for talking with me.
So you can hear that James was not wanting to question too much about the incubating eggs, because as a substitute teacher at that time, he is dependent on the teacher to request him. So it's a job security issue with him.
Yeah, that can be tricky. I faced that as well in a couple of my jobs, and, you know, trying to push boundaries to how far I can go.
Right.
And I can feel for him, because I was just thinking we should do a series about living vegan in a non-vegan world, which is, this is what it's kind of about.
Yeah.
And not just to basically single out the 5 or 10% of vegans that are in Canada, that's a big number, but to start having these discussions when it's coming out so much right now, especially with the climate march that so many children were involved with a couple of weeks ago.
That's
here
right.
in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Like, if they're getting that kind of education, then how much further is it going? And then why can't they talk about animals in James's school, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
This is in Canada.
Yeah. And it's just frightening to me that the teachers are so worried about this. I wanted to address the idea of milk days, which is promoted by the BC Dairy Association, which is considered a nonprofit, actually.
And they did that 40 years ago when I was in school.
Exactly.
Well, not quite 40, but almost.
They can send mobile classrooms around, and they have a trailer with a live cow in it that they drag this cow around, and they talk about how important milk is in a healthy, balanced diet. Still, even though Canada Food Guide is now recommending water as the drink of choice, The BC Dairy Association states on their website currently that Canada's Food Guide recommends milk as a healthy drink option other than water. So, you know, there's some black days there. I don't think the school is really up on the Canada Food Guide, and I've seen this with my grandson's mm-hmm. school and the healthy snacks list that they give to the parents and that sort of thing. A lot of these are not healthy and are no longer recommended by the Canada Food Guide. I think we need to start to get to the bottom of that. Why should we promote one industry, the dairy, over other?
Right. And let it be known that the only reason why all of these animal products have been dropped from this year's Canada Food Guide is because the government wouldn't allow animal agriculture to play a role in this year's deciding of what should be on there.
Yeah, the lobbyists were.
Which had always happened in the past. Mm-hmm. It was more about science and dietitians. And we did a show about that earlier this year by Vicente Molina, a dietitian who was part of the process. So, and they also warned Canadians to be wary of marketing.
Exactly.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
I'm with Megan Thorne, who's a music student at Vancouver City College. Hi, Megan. Thanks for agreeing to do this interview with Animal Voices.
Thanks for having me.
I understand that you're currently a student at Vancouver City College, but I want to go back a few years to when you were in high school and maybe even before that, perhaps elementary school. Mm-hmm. You've told me that although you're vegan now, at that time you were what you call an ethical vegetarian. Can you describe what you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, now being vegetarian, it sounds really silly to be an ethical vegetarian, but what I meant by that really was my sister and I decided to go vegetarian when I was 11, when we were both 11. I'm a twin, and I come from a family of omnivores, so we were the first people in our family to decide to not eat meat, and at that time, we had made this decision together, like, we're not going to do anything that hurts animals, so we did that to the best of our ability, so at that point, it was no meat, no products tested on animals, no leather for wool, etc., but it did take quite a long time for me to actually learn that the dairy industry and the egg industry was equally cruel to the meat industry and was something that I didn't want to participate in. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, as I think I mentioned to you earlier, I also was in that position for years. And I think a lot of vegetarians are ethically vegetarian and just don't know about the dairy and the mm-hmm. egg industry.
Absolutely.
So when you were in school, you started being a vegetarian at age 11. That's pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
So you were still in just at the end of elementary school, I guess.
I guess that would have been grade 6, yeah.
Okay. Can you think back to that, those times, and remember anything that stands out for you about your experience being a vegetarian in the school setting?
Yeah, I mean, I would consider myself fairly lucky because I grew up in North Delta, which the community in North Delta is very Indo-Canadian. So I grew up with a lot of other vegetarians, but I didn't grow up with a lot of people who were vegetarian for, like, ethical animal rights reasons.
Right.
So I didn't feel so much of an outsider because of the way that I was eating, but we had certain projects, even in elementary school, that I felt very uncomfortable with, and I didn't feel like there was a lot of understanding as to why they would make me uncomfortable. Like, in grade 6 or 7, we actually had to do a dissection on a little baby squid. So there was like 13 little squids given to the class, and I was just horrified that this was something that we had to do, and didn't feel like a lot of people understood why I had such a problem with it. So that was kind of weird because I guess I felt it would be obvious, but maybe not. So
what did you do at that time?
So we were supposed to be in, I think, pairs or groups of three, and I was like, I just told my teacher, I'm like, I'm not going to do anything with this. Like, they can do the work, and I'll, I don't know, take notes, but I'm like, I'm not going to cut open a squid. Like, that's awful. And it was kind of unfortunate, really, because I had a wonderful teacher at the time who obviously was not vegetarian or vegan, but she really thought that this would be a project that the class would love and really enjoy because it was, you know, so sciencey and interesting, and I was kind of a little rain cloud on that day, but So I just didn't really participate in it. That was kind of what I felt the best I could do at that time with that situation. Mm-hmm. But, and then in high school, there was more dissection, which I did a bit more with, but back in elementary school, there wasn't, I felt a lot of options on how to handle it.
Did you feel that there were any more options in high school?
Yes and no. In my biology 11 class that I took, we had to dissect a cricket. But they were like really big. Like they're not the standard size crickets. They were probably as long as my phone. It was kind of weird. But we had ample notice that this was going to be a project that we had to do. And I talked to my teacher ahead of time and I just explained why I was uncomfortable with it, why I wouldn't be participating in it. And at that point, they actually had it set up so that if students didn't want to participate in the dissection, that they could do essentially an online version, so it was like this animated little cricket, and you could like look at his organs, but it was all like cartoony.
Right.
So I did that instead. Yeah.
And how was your teacher with that?
She was really good. She didn't fight me on it at all. She was like, "Oh yeah, I understand, no problem." She was a vegetarian, so
oh.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. I'm like, "Why are you doing this if you're vegetarian?" Mm-hmm. But yeah, she was actually quite supportive of me not wanting to participate in that dissection.
Okay, good. Well, that's a good news story. I think it's changed
yeah.
a little bit over the years. And it is getting better with the Animals and Science Institute. They're really pushing the different types of dissection kits, you know, either online or models or that sort of thing, mm-hmm. so that there's a lot of different options now, and they're very helpful to the schools if they want
mm-hmm.
that. Did you find did it make you feel that you were apart from the other students? Was it difficult for you to deal with it? It sounds like your teacher was supportive, but were there any repercussions from the other students?
Not so much. Like I've kind of, ever since I went vegetarian, I've sort of had this righteous anger, and I'm not rude to people, but I don't really feel a lot of shame, I guess, for my choice to not participate in those activities. And I think because I've been so open about why I don't participate in those things, and if I try to be educational to friends as opposed to judgmental, but mm-hmm. so I was really able to get a sort of sense of community in high school. I mean, my sister obviously was vegetarian with me, and then one of our friends went vegetarian, and then we had another friend who went pescatarian, and then I had a friend in later high school who went vegan. So I kind of just surrounded myself with other people that cared about animals
mm-hmm.
and didn't really engage so much with people who weren't that way. I mean, you always get comments, and I think every vegan especially has experienced this. And, you know, I did get comments here and there about that it was, you know, silly of me not to eat meat, or that animals, you know, were meant to be eaten. But I think because I felt really, like, in my heart that it was wrong to do that, it didn't really sink in. Like, I just kind of didn't care what those people had
mm-hmm.
to say. So I guess I was fortunate in that way to have kind of a thicker skin about it.
Did you find that there were food items that it was difficult? I know you said you were in North Delta and there's a lot of vegetarians around you, so maybe not as much issue as if you had been in a different school system or even vegan at the time?
Certainly if I'd been vegan, it would have been a lot harder, but there were some challenges. I mean, elementary school especially, because you know, we would get these, like, catered lunches type of things, and it was this really fun thing for everyone, and we'd get food from different restaurants. And the options for, like, the regular eaters was, you had, like, three or four options, and it was, like, the vegetarian option, which was, like, I don't know, two slices of bread with a tomato in between them. So it was, you know, and I think, again, like, everyone who's vegan has experienced that
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. But I think that's one area that the school system is kind of letting down plant-based eaters, whether they're vegetarian or
right.
vegan, because I think part of the responsibility to make different dietary choices feel more normal to kids is kind of on the teachers or the school board. And I think had those options been more available and just seen more as a normal option, it would have helped normalize plant-based eating as opposed to it being this kind of weird other kind of thing, you know? I think that's a big shift that I would hope the schools can start making, because I think as soon as we start taking the judgment away from being a plant-based eater, and instead of having it normal and then the other, if it's just different ways of eating that are all normal, you know, I think that would really help make people feel more accepted, and also make other people who are maybe curious about plant-based eating not find it so unsavory, you know, if they have like a regular option. You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, like you said, there was one vegetarian option and maybe three or four other options, omnivore options. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it would be nice to have more plant-based options just in general in the school systems, I think, now. And especially with the new food guide that we have in Canada, there's a lot of reason for the schools to go more into that direction.
Absolutely.
So now that you're a student at VCC, you're in the musicianship course, is that right?
Yeah, I'm in the music program, yeah.
And you've been vegan for the past 2 years, which mm-hmm. you credit to Anonymous for the Voiceless. How did that happen?
Oh, it was... I was coming home from work, and the Fraser Valley or Langley chapter, they often do the Anonymous for the Voiceless cubes at the Surrey Central bus station. Mm-hmm. So I have to stop there on my way home from work. And there was a demonstration by Anonymous for the Voiceless, and I was watching some of the footage. And I remember my first feeling was anger, because I was like, in my head, I'm like, you know, the only people that this is going to affect are people that already care about animals and are already doing their part. Mm. And I really felt that, like, I was already doing my part as a vegetarian. And one of the workers came over to me and just started talking. And for me, the hardest thing at that point for me was some of the pig footage, because I had a real sensitivity towards pigs for some reason. And she mentioned that the chicken footage was hard for her. And she asked, you know, if I was vegetarian or vegan. I said, I'm a vegetarian. And she just said, you know, you might want to look into the egg industry and the dairy industry. And I actually started crying, like, watching it. And thinking about it now, I'm, like, getting teary because it's really hard to watch. And so I started crying, and then she started crying.
Oh.
And they were both hugging each other and crying. And then I got on the bus, and I cried all the way home. And then I spent the next week looking into the dairy industry and the egg industry, and that was pretty much it. I was like, all right, this is definitely not what I thought it was. I definitely had this idea of, like, happy cows on farms, and it really is not like that. So once I learned that, it was very easy for me to just not want to eat any of that anymore.
That's remarkable, because I think that there's a lot of times when people that who are vegetarians wouldn't even stop at something like that. They would keep on mm-hmm. going, thinking, yeah, like you said, I'm already doing my bit, I'm vegetarian, and everything's cool.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Because we don't know. The dairy industry and the egg industry hides it pretty well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, it's even come down to the marketing, right? It's like Laughing Cow and mm-hmm. Fairlife Milk, and it's like, no, they're not laughing, they're not
right.
happy, it's not fair. But that's really the image that they give us, and even commercials, it's always these nice, beautiful farms and lots of green pastures, and that's really not what the reality is. So it is kind of unfortunate, I think, that sometimes vegetarians do have a higher level of defense, because we don't want to feel like we've been doing maybe the wrong thing, or aren't maybe as good as we thought that we were. And I think it takes a bit of courage, actually, to look at our own choices and say, maybe I haven't been doing as much as I thought that I was. Maybe I'm not really doing my part. And I think that is kind of a roadblock for a lot of vegetarians.
I think it's quite shocking for a lot of vegetarians, actually, that mm-hmm. that they what the reality, what the truth is. And it's a bit of a hurdle to get over. I remember being in shock when I found out at first mm-hmm. And having to completely, you know, change, because it is still a big change from vegetarian to vegan.
Mm-hmm.
So your learning environment now is a little different than being in high school. Are you in a cohort with music students?
Yes, it's a closed program, so the only people in my courses are other music majors.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is just musicians in this program, and no one else from the school is really allowed in, so it's a bit exclusive in a weird way, but it's just a closed program.
So you get to know the other students in your area quite well, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, some people certainly you get to know very well, and there is quite a big environment. Like, it's a very supportive, for musical things, it's a very mm-hmm. supportive environment, maybe not so much in other things. so you do get to know people fairly well, I would say.
The reason I ask that is because I think it's different if you're in a situation where you know the other students as opposed to in a huge group of students that change with each class that you go into. Mm-hmm. In terms of your environment being supportive of your ethical choice to be vegan, do you find that your environment is supportive at school now?
You know, I would say it's actually less supportive. It's a less supportive environment than I felt I had in high school, actually. And I don't know if that shift is because I'm vegan now, and I think that's considered a lot more extreme for non, you know, plant-based eaters, or if it's just, I think part of it also has to do with when we're young, like when we're kids in elementary school and even high school, I think we do have more energy to be compassionate, whereas now, I mean, there's people in my classes that are in their 40s and older, so I think sometimes there can be a bit of hardness there, and that sort of mentality of like maybe that I'm making a bigger deal of something than what it is. So I personally haven't found it to be a very supportive environment for, you know, veganism or animal welfare issues.
Do you mean being compassionate that the other students aren't compassionate to you, or do you mean that you're not compassionate about their attitudes?
I just mean I feel like they care less about animals in general. Like, I know in elementary school, if we watch movies like Charlotte's Web, you're going to have kids that are really sad and
right.
are crying about, you know, Charlotte dying or the aspect of Wilbur dying. Mm-hmm. But in college, you don't really have that. I think people are a bit more closed off and are less willing to be vulnerable. So I think there is a bit more defensiveness there when it comes to, you know, evaluating their own choices and how it impacts animals.
Can you give me an example of how you find your school environment oppositional to being a vegan?
Yeah, I mean, within the social aspect of it, we were having a big discussion before the climate march that happened a couple Fridays ago.
Mm-hmm.
And one girl in my class had said, you know, everyone should be there. Everyone should be at the climate march. And I was like, yeah, I agree. Everyone should be at the climate march. And I said, and just so you guys know, like, for those of you who are interested in how you can help the planet, going vegan is one of the biggest ways as an individual that you can lower your carbon footprint and help the environment. It's a really good way to stand up and protect the environment. And people started laughing at me.
Oh.
And I was really shocked by that. And the girl who had suggested everyone go to the climate march, like, rolled her eyes at me. And I was, like, just really, really surprised by that. And even my teacher, he says, well, yeah, but, you know, like, cheese and milk, like the French cheeses. And I'm like,
mm-hmm.
Really? So my response was not, I was a bit blunt and I said, you know, I don't really care about how good cheese tastes when our environment is dying because of the choices we're making for food.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I didn't handle that as gracefully as I could have, but it was very shocking to me. I've never actually had people in that kind of environment, like, just laugh at a suggestion like that. It was quite shocking.
Really interesting that they would be that defensive about it.
Yeah.
In saying that, do you think that you actually opened up some avenues for discussion? I mean, even though they laughed at it, do you think that's something that they're thinking about? Did you have any indication later that they were having some thoughts about?
Yeah, I mean, I think that regardless of how people take it, I think bringing up veganism, because it can be such an explosive topic,
mm-hmm.
I think it always makes people think about it. I mean, after that, I had some people coming up to me and saying, well, how do you get enough protein as a vegan? Like, how do you make sure you have lots of protein? So we had a bit of a discussion about that. And I'm like, you know, you don't need like 500 grams of protein a day, you know? Because he was like, you know, I need lots of protein. And I'm like, no, you don't. Like, you're a lanky guy. Like, you're fine. And then I did have a discussion with some of my more, like, friends in the program about it mm-hmm. afterwards. But there's not another vegan in the program, which was really surprising to me. And there's only one vegetarian in the program, and that was very shocking as well. I feel kind of like I'm on this little island by myself.
Interesting. What about what about the food choices that you have at school if you go to the cafeteria there?
Yeah, that was another thing that was really surprising, because VCC, we're in downtown Vancouver, and I was really excited because I'm like, oh, yeah, we're downtown. We're going to have all these choices. And I forgot to bring lunch one day, and I went to the cafeteria and looked around. And the only things that I could get that were vegan were, like, apples just by themselves or chips. And everything else had dairy or egg or meat in it. And I was kind of flabbergasted by that because we have a special culinary program. So we have kids prepare lunches all the time. We have, like, our set things. But even the veggie trays had, you know, dairy dipping or dressing or whatever in it, which was quite a letdown, actually.
That's remarkable, actually, because they do have quite a culinary program there. And, and you would think that at this stage of the game that they would be teaching plant-based foods and plant-based recipes, because those people are going to go out in the industry, and that's what they're going to have to know, some of that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How do you think the attitudes and biases that you've encountered affect your educational experience?
You know, it's kind of hard to say. On the one hand, being someone who's been pretty open about being vegetarian and then vegan, negative attitudes are something that I'm kind of used to, mm-hmm. in a way. I do feel like some teachers, unfortunately, one specifically, does treat me different because I'm vegan. She definitely didn't respond well when she found out that I was, and oddly enough, she brings it up like every other class that I'm in with her. So I think that whenever you're entering an environment where you have to kind of make nice with a lot of people, I think there is going to be some bias. I think veganism is a very polarizing topic because people are so defensive about it. So in some ways, it has made some of the experience a bit uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But then I've also found people that are more open to talking about it and evaluating their choices. So I think it's just going to be a mixed bag if you're in a big program.
How does that teacher respond to you that you feel is different than they respond to other people?
She's just been very rude to me in class and when I've had private discussions with her. And I thought that maybe she was just kind of like that with everyone. But then I had another student bring it up, like, why is she being so rude? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, so that was kind of shocking. But she'll bring it up in class. Like, you know, she'll be like, oh, I had turkey bacon this morning. Sorry, Megan. And I'm like, okay, well, you don't have to do that. You know what I mean?
Right. So she's targeting you.
Yeah.
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 Interesting, because to me that shows that there's something that's really bothering her about it. And if she wasn't bothered by it for some reason, then she wouldn't be bringing it up.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's not like you're forcing her to not eat turkey bacon or something, you know.
Yeah.
So if you had the opportunity to go in and change something in your current school environment, what would you do?
In my current environment, I think that would be pretty tough because it is a very focused program. In terms of schooling in general, I think that there needs to be a really big shift in the way that we talk about individual responsibility, not just towards, I mean, the animal welfare ethics thing is kind of hard because people are going to say, you know, there's a lot of debate that can happen there. Some people feel like animals aren't entitled to, you know, their own life. But there's other things that you can't really debate. Veganism or a plant-based diet is healthier for people. You know, a plant-based diet is better for the environment. And I think that schools need to, especially elementary schools and high schools, need to make that a part of their teaching because we have courses on how to be better for the environment. We talk about recycling and composting, but really we all have an individual responsibility to be the best that we can be for the environment, especially and for our own health. And the animal agriculture industry is something that's just never really brought up, which is crazy because it has such a huge impact. So I just feel like we need to start integrating a bit of academics towards learning about how our choices impact the environment and our health.
So you think the environmental issues would be easier for people to swallow?
Absolutely. Just because there is, I mean, I say there's less debate because I believe in science than some people certainly don't believe in climate change. But I think there'd be less public outcry from parents, especially if you were to say, hey, you know, it's better for the environment as opposed to, hey, we shouldn't kill animals anymore. I think that would be really risky for our schools to introduce and for our teachers as well,
right.
Unfortunately.
Okay. Well, I agree with you there. I think that going at it from a different angle, and I mean, there are lots of good reasons for becoming plant-based, and it doesn't have to be, people don't have to focus all on the animals. If they focused on their health or if they focused on the environment, whatever gets them there is kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah. But,
well, thanks so much for sharing your experiences with us, Megan.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So you have been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 100.5 Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Join in next week. It's going to be Friday, October the 18th, and our producer and host, Elise Jacobson, will be hosting that show. She will be featuring an interview with AFCO on her new book, Racism as Zoological Witchcraft, A Guide for Getting Out. I saw AFCO speak at the Animal Rights Conference this summer, and she was very popular, really great speaker, so we will have her here on the show next week. We here at Animal Voices modestly ask you to keep connected with the Animal Voices website and our Instagram and our Facebook page. You can find us at Animal Voices Vancouver. We also have all of our podcasts at animalvoices.org and also available on iTunes and Google Play. This is all free content for you. Please, please listen and please share. Get it out widely. We're all volunteer run, all nonprofit here. We're just here to spread the word, to get out information. So to close the show, we will end with Chuck Berry's School Days. Stay tuned now for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.
Thank you.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. Open the pan, working your fingers right down to the bone. The guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring goes the bell. The cook in the lunchroom's ready to sell. You're lucky if you can find a seat. You're fortunate if you have time to eat. Back in the classroom, open your books. But the teacher don't know how mean she looks. Soon as 3 o'clock rolls around, you finally lay your burden down. Close up your books, get out of your seat. Down the halls and into the street. Up to the corner and round the bend. Right to the juke joint you go in. Drop the coin right into the slot. You gotta hear something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance.